One thing that we do need to remember is we need to know that when Noel talks about 1% of giving, our population is like 6% of the nation. And by 2030, it's going to be 8 or 9%. And the reality is that somebody should come up with the money to empower that. And so we need to apply some nice, polite political pressure on people who do look like Bill Gates, and maybe they look like Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, actually. and actually, she's doing a great job. She is probably the wealthiest woman, Asian woman in America right now. But anyway, what I wanted to do is have you think about a message that Dr. Troutman's been using, and that's about, one, creating a social movement for health equity. And that's why I like this slide, because each of you has spoken about equity in some measure. You've spoken about democracy or democratic values in some measure. And what we want to kind of end with here is this, or build upon here, is what will it take to create a movement for change, a movement to achieve health equity, API health equity. So I want to hear, actually, I'm going to do something Carl-esque, and that is to actually ask this group here, if you were to build a better tomorrow for the Asian Pacific Islander community in the principles of health equity and try to achieve that by a generation from now, what would you do with each other, actually, with each other to help build that movement? Anyone want to start?
I'll pick on John.
I'll take a crack. Okay. So before I got to a policy shop, I was a community organizer. I actually worked up in Oakland. And saw firsthand the real power that could sort of be created by unlocking and networking people together. And so, you know, above and beyond what I talked about in terms of shifting how API folks think about government, creating more cohesion with other communities of color, I would actually, if I was just working with these three people, sort of work with your data to identify where there would be hotspots of API folks, and understanding sort of what their core issues with the data, but understanding that, and we've been working at the Advancement Project with data for some time, that every data set that you get your hand in is somehow incomplete. So then to also engage actual community residents in those hotspots to say, hey, what truths or wisdom don't we know from the data, and therefore what are your biggest issues? I think maybe some of the apps and tools that you have access to can help us to bring their voices forth. And as organizations or as initiatives get launched from the community and hopefully with an organizing and power building tilt, I contact the hall for some dollars for that group to actually push and to fight their fights as they move along. And, you know, it's got to be one community at a time in this kind of work. And again, we say this time and time again, you don't get true power shifted by doing for a community. You got to get the community to do for itself. And in the end, we can't be at all places at all times. And so the more we can create that power, the more they can keep folks accountable and make sure that change sort of sustains. So that's what I would like.
I would do the same thing if I were in your shoes. Please work with us. I was also, I think what maybe binds us all is we all had activist childhoods and adulthoods, hopefully. So I was also an activist before I became an academic. So data here, I think what data shows is an opportunity for redistribution. And so when I showed the hotspots, they were the hotspots. So I wanted to look at like the hotspots compared to the non-hotspots and also all the places where there are Asian, Native, Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders where they're not in the places that have the resources. So that's what I would want to work with, the leadership development, and also cultivate that your giving circles, Noel, not just concentrate on the places where they live, because those tend to be the wealthier, better off areas, but to also concentrate in developing communities in these other places. And I think this is what I hear when I show California data to national meetings, and they'll say, you know, but I live in Illinois, and you know, somewhere in the Midwest. I live in Indiana. So how do we do something like CHIS in these other states? How do we have these local data to inform where the needs are? So if there was some kind of pointing to redistribution or being certainly being firmly rooted in your community, but also looking outward and looking at other communities that don't have as much.
I'm going to start with Noelle, and this is just because we've been focusing on data hotspots, but you know, like Nias has said, we all come from an advocate kind of centralization, and I think that we start with giving early, giving when we're children. And so as I have a seven-year-old, I'm going to have him do some, you know, giving to the community in different ways, whether that's going to the food bank, whether that's participating in different community events. But that starts early, and so as a fostering mother, you can do that. And I think when we talk about what is it, creating awareness about where their needs are with the community, with the Asian American Pacific Islanders, just understanding what the needs are and really having that brand. These are the needs. This is what we were going to go for. And, yeah, looking at different segments, like there's communities of children, schools, universities. Universities can be the kind of, I guess, would be a place where you can get really empowerment to get, and not just adults. So I'd start there in terms of coalition building. And within the health integration is that, as I kind of mentioned, that digital maturity for people and generational differences is huge. So I think that a young child, even in your family, can share like an iPad usage with an elderly person, and we can go from there. You have to make comfortable, unless you create the benefits, the technology won't be used. And with physicians, you know, EHR is not very easy to adopt. So it's creating that organizational support for training, shadowing, and getting better, and having incentives within the organization to do that. And I think within the advocacy and the coalition and redistribution and all of this advocacy that John does, well, it's really difficult because it's those structures and the political systems. So it's really thinking about the strategies about e-health and social service networks and the data of the hotspots. How can that be created so that we work on a campaign that has the probability for success?
Yeah, I just I'm blown away by just learning more about each of your work areas, and I think it's a good reminder that in nonprofit work we often get so ingrained in what we're doing, and you know, we're trying to build this campaign of 50 giving circles, but that's such a good reminder to pull our heads up and look around and see what tools are out there, and to really build coalitions across you know, communities. You know, we talked about reaching out to other communities of color, but I feel like even before that, we need to look within our own community and start there and build those coalitions, and also at the same time be looking outside of our community. So I just feel like there's a really nice natural connection between the data, the empowerment, the tech tools. I'm excited to follow up with each of you. I mean, I think that we can really build off of the hotspots of data there, and to really go back to our Giving Circle leaders and say, you know, is this what you're sensing in your community? APIP is here to provide a model for the Giving Circle work, but it's all very custom to each location. It's very hyper-local, and we really depend on people to say, that's not going to work in my community, or yes, that is going to work, and we really think that that's the best way to do things. So I'm excited to follow up with you about the hotspots. You know, I think gaining the political power by cultivating leaders through Giving Circle and civic engagement, like you said, you start young, and I think, you know, I wouldn't be here doing the work I'm doing if I didn't learn how to be civically engaged and give back to my community if it wasn't for my grandparents, my parents, and everybody that came before me. So I do think that that's really important, and that hopefully by getting involved in a Giving Circle and giving back to your community, whether it's a can of soup or a few dollars, that, you know, you begin to get civically engaged, and maybe you'll think about running for office one day, or, you know, maybe you'll sit on a board of a nonprofit or a foundation. So I do think all these pieces really flow together nicely.
And what I was just thinking when Betty was talking about technology and e-health, I was thinking about e-voting, actually, and how we can actually empower both what John's doing and Noelle, what you're talking about, as well. So I think, you know, my goal here is to really think big about how we can actually leverage the today of, I mean, what Chis just came out with just last week, and actually utilize that data and leverage it so that we can actually potentiate change and create collaborations. So that's really what our goal is within the Asian and Pacific Islander Caucus. One of the things that John did, he just came out of another session where the core issue was, is it sustainable? Is it scalable? And I think what I've been hearing when we talk about Asian American populations is, number one, before you talk about scale, understand us. Disaggregate the data, understand my community. And before you come up with a solution, make it customizable to my community. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. And that's what I got out of talking to my people. And I was just kind of curious, from your perspective, are we at the scalable, sustainable place? Or are we at a different place when we're talking about building a social movement among Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders?
I was going to say, once you said custom data, I was thinking of that's expensive.
I'm sorry.
You are a data person.
Because it took a lot of resources So what I presented, the small area estimation, those were pre-digested data of all the zip codes in California with 15,000 plus. So it took a lot of computing power. And before, I believe you even asked us for some data,
Indeed.
Too. So there would be this custom, and it gets really expensive.
It was expensive,
thank you. But this is democratizing data. So this is then making this available to everyone. So is it scalable? Yeah, I think we have a critical mass. I feel like we had a critical mass 10 years ago, but I think we have a critical mass to do this, especially among the younger adult population. And the data is just getting better. We didn't talk about some of you talked about in your session, but then this notion then of big data, where we could infer and from your credit card on your preferences and choices and flu shots, for example, that Google did. So then that's also something where I think we just have to be mindful and have some stewardship in the communities that the assumptions made are really from the heart of the communities, and that's the leadership part. I don't know if I answered your question, but
it's very interesting because I'm coming out of governing council, and we're actually talking about the strategic plan and partnering with Coca-Cola, mm-hmm. and that's creating quite a ripple effect, because some people don't see Coca-Cola as a natural affinity partner because of big soda and what they're doing with, calories and stuff like that. So I think you're leading people in the right direction to kind of think, how can we align with other people to get things done? And where are their strategic alliances, and where do you step back, type of thing. So that's great. Anybody else? And I want to engage the audience and make sure you get your questions addressed as well.
So whereas it's critically important, I think, for us to disaggregate the data to understand the particularities of specific API, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander groups, I do think when it comes to pushing a more powerful agenda, we do need to do some aggregating. I know that growing up, there are times when I'm Asian American, and then there are times when I'm Korean American. It depends on what context I'm in. And unfortunately, there are too many contexts where we say, well, my struggle as a Korean American activist is different than as a Chinese American activist or a JA activist or what have you. Now, there are places which are more enlightened around that. The Bay Area, when I ran a Korean community center up there, it was phenomenal in terms of API folks kind of bringing their power together and really seeing, hey, how do we aggregate our interests? How do we aggregate our power and move that ahead? So in terms of scalability, I think we got to get that going in terms of how do we understand in different places what's going on with the Vietnamese American community is in some ways very similar to what's going on with the Korean American, and how do we sort of bring that power together. I actually feel very hopeful about it. When I think about my daughter who's seven, she spent some time just very quickly. My wife works in South L.A. She did a lot of events down there, my 7-year-old, she was 4 at the time, her name was Naya, she would always have to go into the daycare rooms on the side. And one day she was, after an event, my wife put her in the car, and she was really upset that she was 4. And so my wife was like, hey, why are you so upset? And my daughter was like, you know, I was playing in the room, and these two boys came up to me and called me Chinese baby. My wife's like, oh, it's his first racial experience. How do we talk her through this? You know, she's Korean, not Chinese. Was that the issue? What was the problem here? We really try to dig into it. The more and more she pressed, my daughter finally blurted out, I'm not a baby. Like, that was the issue. It wasn't which community, it was the issue. Right? And so with our next generation, how do we not ingrain some of these lines? And let them play out the way they want.
Anybody else?
Okay. I want to open up the floor to a question.
Hi, DJ. It's not such a question, but I completely agree with you talking about blending the different coalitions. And I think all of you can in one way or another differently, because there's times where there's going to be power within sort of the tiny micro community. But there's times on all of our issues, immigration is a great issue there, that we kept seeing immigration as something that's not in the community. And we forget the fact that it's a major issue for the Asian American communities also. And so I think with the folks who want to be able to get support around some of our issues, we also feel to be able to step up and not just say, what's in it for us, but how do we get with those pressures and get all of us. And those are the lessons learned.
Actually, I think leadership development and how it's being taught right now is a key issue within the API community. I was asked to be a keynote speaker at some emerging leaders for Korean American community kind of thing. And when I told them what I was going to speak about, which is how do we build better cohesion with other communities of color we're having, I was disinvited. So there is this, how do we build a homegrown? How do we do this? And I think there's a time and place for that. But then, you know, when we lost this battle around redistricting, it was because other communities didn't back us up, because we weren't backing them up when they were in their fights. And so you can't expect one without the other. So it was maybe not the most welcome message at the time, but that kind of leadership and thinking, I think, has to change.
And if you could just identify who you are, my
name is DJ Hita, Executive Director of the National Asian American Civil Health Association.
This is an opportunity for us to get to know each other, because this is the beginning of a partnership that's going to take some to build in this organization. Anybody else? Questions?
Sorry, Melanie? Yes, just thinking about aggregation, because I was thinking about this today when I was looking at my presentation. You know, we're always marching in the mantra of disaggregate, and then, but this hotspot analysis that I showed is actually, it's aggregation, it's the whole place. Those weren't Asians. I mean, we chose those hotspots, but, so one way that is to focus then on the places where you live, again, back to the places where you live, East Palo Alto, and then work with all the communities there, not just NHPI communities, and make sure that the structural inequities, that the wage and tax policies, that the social policies, the safety net policies there that are will sustain a healthier Native-wide Pacific Islander population and all the populations that live in the same place where people live, work, play.
So it's kind of a coexistence strategy that you find in Koreatown, which is part black, part Latino, part white, part yuppie, or whatever, part hipster, really, or maybe major hipster, and then partly Korean. Noelle, you were going to say something. You have a look on your face.
No, I mean, I think that what you were just talking about, you know, we need to build just on some of, sorry, I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Any other questions from the floor? Well, I just want to go over this slide about taking action, what you can do. Clearly, we need to keep up with changing demographics, okay? And bottom line is our population is going to double by 2060, okay? And so that's something that we have to our advantage in terms of making sure people pay attention to us because we're a fastest-growing population. Number two is to advocate for funding of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander causes. So one is to understand what those causes are before we even advocate for the funding. Yes.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt you, sir.
It's okay.
Hi, my name is Phil Wong. I'm from New York City. I'm affiliated, with Mansana Beth Israel National Development Research Institute and Columbia University. And you know, this is just something I want to just throw out there. I don't know how it would look like, but are there any ways to also partner transnationally with Asian countries around health? And, you know, because I think that part of it is that we get so isolated within the geographic borders of this country, even though the vast, what is it, like 90% of us are immigrants or children of immigrants, and also many communities go back and forth, right, between their home country and this country, so.
It's a big transnational giving effort, actually. Noelle, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I was just going to say that that's something that we've been looking at quite a bit, is the transnational, just transfer of wealth. I think typically, you know, the API community is often thought of as not being very philanthropic because a lot of our dollars go back to communities back home. But it's very clear to us that there is a lot of money that is being transferred here as well as in both regions. So actually, I would say that we're even more philanthropic just because our money is going in both places.
A different type of remittance.
It is. So I think that what you raised is a really exciting thought.
Right, maybe through, like in terms of having like transnational health initiatives. Mm-hmm. Right, from what I understand, like for instance, when you're in mental health, that mental health in many countries, especially including some East Asian countries like Korea, South Korea, North Korea has its own issues. I'm Korean, so I can say that. But, you know, like for instance, what's happening there with like mental health here. I know mental health among Asian American women is a huge issue. So I don't know if there can be some interesting projects like that could be developed.
Maybe if we were talking about transnational, looking at one, how we define pathology and how we define wellness. Because I think you're absolutely right. When we stay too isolated from those doing things, because there is such a large population that's either foreign-born parent that was born foreign-born parent, this isn't Asian history. This is and it's going to be forcing, I think, the way that we perceive the issues and then by extension the way we perceive the solutions. Because we always look at the Western-centered model of pathology. And we redefine wellness, we redefine what it is to have healthy communities. And I think this slide, I think it might have been your slide around that follows the research that says in a lot of ways there is a protective factor. And so
the enclave.
And David Tucker did this huge study. Mm-hmm. And he was actually doing the health community, they were just saying caution the United States actually gave us female health. Because a lot of you are here, yeah. Results have become. So even though there are issues for the different populations, so we're going to go back and reclaim part of what was the community to replicate it. That we don't have to always look at the diagnosis and everything else, but how to go on the community. State of families to have different ways of looking at it because it's more efficient three or four generations than this whole community that's in
constant. So what's interesting, DJ, is that you actually went to the anti-medical model into redefining wellness or wealth, actually with W-E-L-T-H, which includes equity, and I know that this is big for, I mean, equity is like Nina's for middle name here. So I like this. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that thought leaders like Dr. Troutman, you know, will need. Whoever our new executive, you know, I'm sure he, who is going to be our president at the end of the session, and then whoever is going to turn out to be our next president-elect could very well be a health equity leader. So I think what I want to do is make sure that we have the tools to empower ourselves and empower our communities. So I'm going to call on you, actually, because you decided to form a giving circle. And right?
I'm a part of giving circles across the country. We're currently trying to develop a giving circle here in the South and as well as in the Midwest. we have a registry of Giving Circle from the east and the west coast, because population-wise, we're really down there, but it's looking in the south and the Midwest where the need is really high, and it's where the conversations really need to happen when we start having conversations about health and wellness. And so we're, you know, we're just really encouraging people to get together. It's supposed to be a fun and really simple process of coming together, pulling resources, and then funding what's really important in your community. You know, being at headquarters, we don't get to hear the stories about what's going on in the Midwest and the South, about what's really important there, and so we really depend on the conversations that are happening in the field. And so we're able to pick those stories up and share them when we get the opportunity to attend the conferences like this, or even through, you know, dialogue with foundations.
Well, I didn't know, and you had mentioned that there's a great rate of growth among Asians in the South. And one of the things that I discovered when I was organizing the Day of Asians was that Louisiana ranks 49, 50, 51st, 53rd on a number of different health parameters. And then Mississippi is next, I mean, in terms of being at the bottom type of thing. And I'm just curious, when we're looking at this coexistence of people cohabitating in the same area, whether or not Asians who are multiplying in these areas will also incur this tremendous disparities. And tremendous disparities because you have policymakers that are not expanding Medicaid either. So that might be something that we may want to take away. I mean, I'm learning something from you in terms of this being a new hotspot. And now I need to kind of figure out how to align with people that are fighting for Medicaid expansion in Louisiana and how to multiply that across the nation. So that's my takeaway. What's your takeaway, Vishnu?
I saw one picture from Houston, and England was giving in that circle. So, I don't know, it's definitely population growth has been happening in the South. And we have witnessed that in many parts on a daily basis, like in the cities like Houston, Dallas, you name it.
Well, I didn't mean to project
that. Yeah, I didn't think. But definitely that WELLT as well.
Oh, okay. Yes. That's so funny. Somebody told me to take that word out. a member of my EC put it back in. That's great.
That makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Anybody else? I'm gonna call on people. You don't raise your hand.
Can I also wanted to add, we're doing some really good work with the Investment Network as well. They and Giving Circles is also another tool that will really support that work over time, because it really brings people down at the community level and have really nice conversations with each other. So that's kind of, I think, some of the next level work that we'd love to see is kind of this cross-racial, cross-ethnic work.
I lost track of time. I'm a terrible moderator. I'm so sorry. It's past 2:00.
Yes.
We need to go. So, last round of applause here.